The first reading that we had today comes from a part of the books of Kings known as the Elijah-Elisha cycle. I know I should probably say Elisha, but I always find it so difficult because then I can never really tell the two apart. So we'll make Elijah be the first prophet and his successor be Elisha. It's a little bit easier, at least for me, to understand that way. And in the stories about Elisha, we come upon a general whose name is Naaman. Again, they tell me that if you want to transpose the Hebrew into English, that you want to say a double vowel as a long vowel. So Naaman, or Baal as the false god, or Aaron, if you happen to have that name, huh? So if you ever watched those skits, they were right all along. I don't know. Naaman is a general who has had a conquest. He has defeated the Israelites in his area, sweeping south from Syria into the Holy Land. And as he has come south into the Holy Land, in one of his raids, he captures a Hebrew girl. And she rather takes to her new master. She likes him. But she can't understand why he puts up with his leprosy. Now, we aren't quite sure that leprosy in biblical times means what it means now. It was some sort of terrible disease that you had that was considered contagious and probably given to you as a result of God's punishment in some way. And so here's this man, and she says, you know, you don't deserve this. Go to Elisha the prophet, and he'll take care of things for you. Well, it takes a lot of persuading. But finally, he decides he's going to go to Elisha and ask for healing. So off he goes. But he can't just go, you know, just like himself. He's got to take some gifts with him. So he's got how many mules covered with all sorts of gifts. And then as he's going, the king finds out, it provokes a political incident. See, those Syrians are causing trouble again. Here he comes south. All he wants to do is to go to Elisha, but it's getting really complicated. So he finally makes it to Elisha's house. He's ready for the prophet to come and do something spectacular. And boy, is he disappointed, because Elisha doesn't invoke God, his God, before Naaman. Elisha doesn't say any long-winded prayers. Elisha doesn't perform any sort of liturgy of healing or of cleansing. In fact, if truth be known, Elisha doesn't even show up. He sends his servant to say, hey, by the way, Naaman, jump in the Jordan River 7 times, you'll be just fine. That's it. And he is so angry. You know, you think, what's behind that? Probably what's behind that is that Naaman is a general. And, you know, getting to that level, you had to take a lot of, you know, guff, I'm sure, climbing the ranks. And once you get there, you expect a certain amount of respect and obedience. And right now, Elisha has shown him neither. And he's very irritated with Elisha, so irritated that he's ready to leave. When his own servant says to him, listen, come on. If he told you to do something spectacular, like, you know, carry a 3,000-pound weight, you know, up a mountain or something, you'd have done that. All the more, just give it a try. So we hear what he does. He goes and jumps in the Jordan River 7 times, and he's cleansed. Very interesting. Probably what got in his way initially was that sense of entitlement. I'm a general. I'm entitled to respect and obedience. And that sense of entitlement kept him probably from really being able to accept Elisha as he really was and God's gifts as they really are. The 10 lepers that we meet in Luke's gospel, they don't have that problem. In terms of faith, they're a little further along than what Naaman was. They observe the law, which says that when they have this horrible condition of leprosy, they are to stay outside of the village. And when people draw near, they're to yell out, leper, leper, so that people stay away from them. horrible thing that how they were treated. And we hear them doing just that. Jesus sees them, they stay at a distance, but they ask for healing, for cleansing. And Jesus, just like the prophet Elisha, does no sort of fancy prayer. He doesn't touch them. He doesn't even perform any sort of liturgy of healing. All he does is give them a command, just like Elisha had done. And they immediately obey his command. They don't have the problem with expecting a different, nope, if that's what he says to do, do it. Their faith is further along. As they go, they're healed. Now, if we cut back to Naaman for a minute, the story that we heard today occurs right after Naaman's been healed. We heard the healing itself, and then he's so amazed that he comes back to see the prophet again. And this time, notice, Elisha himself shows up. This bit's important. Elisha has to be there for this part. Because what Naaman's going to try to do is what so often happens after God intervenes in a person's life. He wants to make it up to God somehow. He wants to pay for it. And so he wants to offer Elisha all these gifts. And you hear what Elisha does. He will not take them. Because he has to teach Naaman that God's gifts are free, that God pours them out as he sees fit. We don't earn them. We don't deserve them. They come to us free. In terms of that, that one outsider, the Samaritan leper who comes back to Jesus, he perhaps goes even further in his faith. There are a few scholars of Luke's gospel, one that I read in particular, who said that the words that are used about how that leper approaches Jesus are very significant. Notice that he begins by coming back to the Lord, glorifying God in a loud voice. Maybe we didn't use a loud voice, but we just a little while ago glorified God as a community. When he comes to Jesus, he falls down. He lies prostrate, a very significant sign in liturgy of saying to God, "You're in charge, I'm not." He lies prostrate. Jesus gives him a command, "Stand up." That's the Greek from which we get the word resurrection. It's also a word that was used many times in baptismal ceremonies because the people would stand up and head out of the font toward the east, walking into the new life. And he thanks him. That giving thanks, which is what we're going to do right now, giving thanks. These are liturgical words. The man has come through his experience to liturgy. I think an important point of the reading that we should keep in mind is that liturgy has to have its right place. We are here, I hope, to give thanks because we've already gone through the other steps. We've had to let go of that entitlement thing. We've let God sort of be God again for us. We've accepted God's gifts as they are. We've decided that we too need to glorify God and to lie prostrate and finally to give thanks. When we don't put liturgy in that spot, which we can in our zeal so many times do, I know I do. Come to Mass. Come on, you'll love it. It's great. The music is fabulous. The prayers are great. People show up and it's like, what the heck are they doing? Doesn't make any sense to them. Because they haven't done the first step first. You got to do that first. Then you're ready for liturgy. Let's pray that we will celebrate well today because we can give thanks for what we know personally God has done for us.